It's time for some collective wisdom, a podcast advancing the cannabis revolution one conversation at a time. We all benefit from sharing knowledge and experiences. So if you want to learn about the business of cannabis from those in the trenches, you've come to the right place. Here's your host, Lisa Tolner, co-founder of SensiChew.
Hello and welcome to Collective Wisdom. My name is Lisa Tolner. I'm your host. And today I'm really excited to have two local cannabis enthusiasts and professionals on our show, Stephanie Kimitsuka and Bailey Logan, both co-founders for new dispensaries, The Hook in Watsonville and The Hook in Santa Cruz, both beloved stores to our region. Ladies, welcome to the show. Before we dive in, I'd like to share just a brief background about our guests. Stephanie has spent 5 years as a pharmacy technician working on courses for pharmacy school from University of California, Santa Cruz, where she decided the pharmaceutical industry was not quite for her. She believes some medication is necessary, but that our current healthcare system promotes pills over a healthy lifestyle. She earned an undergrad degree in general biology and worked as a plant research scientist for 2 years, then left to have a child in 2009. She then spent 5 years as a stay-at-home mom and grew cannabis to supplement the family income. When it was time to go back to work, she got a job bud tending at a medical dispensary and worked her way up to become the purchasing manager. Then in 2020, she left and helped found the Hook Dispensary. She believes in cannabis as medicine and that the right combination of terpenes and delivery methods can be helpful in treating a variety of medical conditions. She has a 15-year-old son, and enjoys trail running and playing guitar. Now, Bailey Logan is at the heart of The Hook, where she serves as marketing director. Her role is pivotal in shaping the dispensary's image, drawing from her rich background in wellness and branding. She not only elevates The Hook's presence in the community, but also ensures its branding resonates with the local Santa Cruz vibe. Bailey's influence extends beyond marketing, and her work with Breathe Plus Oneness Yoga Studio in Capitola, 1440 Multiversity, and her agency Rainbow Lasers each reflect her deep connection to wellness and creativity. And through her leadership, Bailey continues to blend her passions, enriching the local wellness and cannabis culture. So we're going to talk about a pretty important subject, parents, alcohol, and cannabis, and how parents and kids can understand cannabis and its role in a healthy lifestyle. So with that, I'm going to kick it off to Steph to take us through some of the things that she's experienced in this topic.
Sure. As a mother, single mother of a 15-year-old, I have a lot of concerns about my kid. You know, this is a different world that we're growing up in. Social media is probably actually, honestly, my biggest concern. You know, it just gives you unrealistic expectations about life, about your self-image that be damaging for kids. Pandemic loss of both education and social skills was hard. Kids are growing up and they're trying to learn how to be adults when they were pretty much taken out of society for 2 years. And it's been hard. It's led to a lot of anxiety and depression amongst kids. And they're dealing with it by turning to drugs, alcohol, cannabis.
It's almost like the draw to cannabis and alcohol and drugs in general, it's pulled from a slightly different rationale or reason now, whereas maybe it was a little more social. You wanted to do what Timmy was doing or what the cool kids were doing, and it was a little more social, and there was a little more of a demand to want to do it to fit in, whereas now I think there is a little bit more involved with just feeling left alone. So a little loneliness from what was caused by the pandemic.
Coping with not fitting instead.
Yes.
I feel like this is hard to talk about without giving background what we just went through.
Go ahead.
The Hook. I'm going to let Bailey give that.
Yeah, I can speak to that. Yeah, at The Hook, we are, exciting news, in the process of opening a third location on the west side of Santa Cruz. We will be the fifth dispensary, and the license that we obtained in partnership with WAM Phytotherapies and Val Corral is going to be, it's a withstanding license, and so we'll be taking over the location that is the former Emily's Bakery that has been there for 42 years.
Know so, where it is.
You know right where it is. A lot of people do. It's famous. Mm-hmm. And I've been learning more about the fame of the spot and the fame of Emily and how much of a beloved figure she's been to our community. So, yeah, we are in the process of moving forward with that. However, we have been facing a lot of resistance from the school board and a group of parents that are concerned about the vicinity to the local high school and Mission Hill Middle School. So that's what we've been going through as we've been really, you know, building and kicking off this process. It's been challenging. And last Thursday, we went in front of the Planning Commission and gave a presentation, as well as the school board also gave a presentation in favor of and in opposition of the dispensary moving in. So this hasn't been an easy road for us. We've been faced with a lot of challenges. You know, it's a sensitive topic. It's really important to note that we deeply care about the community. At The Hook, we're centered around community and wellness, and we use that as the foundation of what we do. And our partnership with WAM just, you know, is another extension of that, really supporting the veterans, the people who are going through a lot of physical pain, are dealing with life-threatening illnesses. And so that is our mission. And so this process has posed a new question for us of being within the vicinity of schools and the opposition stating that it's a concern for children walking by. You know, like I mentioned, it's a beloved place. You know, there's lots of
memories. Major street.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right on Mission Street. A lot of memories made there, foot traffic. And so the concern is that will this dispensary, simply by being there, change the way the children and the youth see cannabis? Will it normalize cannabis? What will that look like going forward? And, you know, I'll pass it back to Steph here to share her personal experience and continue as a mother, but that's what we've been faced with. And so it's brought up a really interesting conversation with us and our whole community. I mean, our community of WAM members, our community at The Hook, and the school board. It's really opened up a lot of lines of communication for us. So that's where we're at.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. That's exciting news.
So the concerned parents, they're worried that we are going to be normalizing their children towards cannabis, which, you know, I understand. I don't want my son smoking cannabis. He's too young. But the fact of the matter is that alcohol consumption is normalized. There will be 19 dispensaries in Santa Cruz County. There's at least that many breweries/restaurants where simply because they serve food there, you are allowed to bring your child there and get hammered in front of them. This is part of our culture. They have board games there for the kids. They even make little kids mocktails so your kids don't feel left out. I no longer drink alcohol, but I did used to be one of those parents. You know, I have a photo of my kid cheersing his father with an apple cider at like 4. And how is this appropriate to normalize alcohol and be concerned about cannabis in the same breath? It's just because it's been legal for so long and cannabis has been illegal is really the truth of it. You know, that doesn't mean that we should be ignoring the dangers of alcohol. Kids with parents who drink frequently, which is more than 5 days a month, which does not sound like a lot, or binge drink, are 4 times more likely to drink themselves. And children with an alcohol use disorder parent, they're 4 times as likely to develop alcohol problems. So why is nobody addressing this? According to a CDC Youth Risk Behavior Survey in 2021, about 27% of high school students have used alcohol in the last 30 days versus almost 18% of current cannabis use. And a little more alarming to me. Not that I want them on cannabis, but alcohol is very dangerous. 10% of Americans age 12 or older have suffered from alcohol use disorder. People die from alcohol, whether it's directly. 2,200 people die from alcohol poisoning every year. That's 6 people every day. 385 Americans die every day just as a result of excessive alcohol use, which is about 95,000 annual deaths in the U.S. This is about 5% of the world's annual deaths. And it costs us a lot besides the loss of life. $28 billion in healthcare, $179 billion in workplace productivity, $13 billion in auto collisions, and $25 billion for criminal justice, all for alcohol. And I'm not to say that cannabis is not a problem. There is also a cannabis use disorder, whereas, you know, alcohol use disorder has a lot of physical consequences, you know, organ failure, stroke, brain function, heart and liver disease, increased risk of cancer, weakened immune system, besides all the physical motor impairment stuff that goes on. Cannabis use disorder is also serious, but is characterized as the continued use of cannabis despite impairment in psychological, physical, or social functioning.
Let's go back for a minute. Before we get into the cannabis use and high volume consumption there, I want to talk a little bit about where we're at as a society with alcohol. It's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. It's like you said, it's in every restaurant. It's in every home. And it's really sort of a social norm, which is part of what makes it so acceptable. And it's had 100 years on in terms of being in society. Sure, there was prohibition, but prohibition was just a speed bump. People were still drinking in the back rooms. Every family was making their own wine or their own vodka. So all it was, you know, a little speed bump that kept it from openly being consumed. I think what's interesting is that we've figured out a way over this last 100 years how to make it social. Sadly, though, with that, because it's so social, it also can be, the overuse becomes very easy. And I think just by its very nature, with alcohol, the way it just affects your brain, you hit a certain point and your decision-making is not there. You know, I always used to tease people. I say, well, if you have too many cocktails, you'll wreck your car. That's a bad thing. You smoke a little too much weed, you might eat an extra pizza, or you won't get off the sofa for an afternoon. There's similarities, but yet the severity of the effects in any one given instance is completely different.
It's important for people to be able to relax. You know, I'm not against alcohol consumption, like, just period. I just think that it's very easy to overdo it versus cannabis. You overdo it, you're right. You might just take a nap or eat too much.
Right.
Yeah. Alcohol, if you overdo it, you might end up in the emergency room getting your stomach pumped or worse.
Exactly.
Yeah, so according to the DEA, zero people have died from a cannabis overdose. I think it would be irresponsible to say that no one ever died as a result of using cannabis, because people, maybe you got in a car accident or whatever, but like nobody has ever OD'd on it. People OD on alcohol every single day. I think that, you know, it is important to relax. I don't begrudge anyone that, but maybe if we substituted alcohol use with cannabis, that we could avoid a lot of health and societal problems. They make cannabis beverages now. They're available in stores. They come in low and high dose, or you can make your own cocktail with a little infused syrup and still be sociable, you know, not feel left out. I am 5.5 years sober, and it is still hard to go out to parties and have people offering you this and that all the time. But now there are things for me, so I can have a can in my hand too.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is hard in a social setting to not want to consume with others. But, you know, cannabis is also falls into that category. It's very social. You know, it's every bit as social as a cocktail, maybe even more so. You know, when you share a joint, or you share a pipe, and there's something really communal about the experience. So I think just as a society, we haven't quite figured out how to make it mainstream enough yet. The stigmatization is still there, sadly. And it takes a long time to change those perceptions when something's been demonized for so long. It'll get there. So for parents, obviously we want to keep our kids safe. Alcohol is something we should be even more worried about, right, than cannabis, and for many reasons. Teenagers getting ready to drive, they can overconsume and go to the hospital or worse. What do you see, and what can you share with parents in terms of cannabis as a substitute for alcohol?
I think that for parents, cannabis is a good substitute for alcohol. I would really caution against mixing it alcohol. So that's one thing. It's just awareness about what you're taking. You can always take more. You can't take less. It's important to know your limits. I really recommend going with dispensary products because they're regulated as far as content, and you'll have a predictable experience versus, you know, just a brownie that somebody baked that who knows what's in it or how much. I think that also contributes to the fear that parents have had of it, because we were all growing up with it. It wasn't regulated, and it was a little easier to be out of control.
It wasn't that strong then either.
It's true. It wasn't that strong, but I definitely have had brownies that people just loaded up like in the past, and it's not something that's happened to me lately. But for parents, whether it's alcohol or cannabis, I think that your kids are going to be interested in it and be tempted to use it for themselves. So I think for parents, it's most important just to be honest and talk with your kids about it, I think is number one. alcohol or cannabis, the brain is still developing into your mid-20s, right? So it's really important to talk with them about these dangers, and they could have an increased likelihood of depression or mental illness. It may affect the way that their brain develops. They're just not ready for that. Was so unhealthy.
Just to add to that, I think parents, as you mentioned, just need to sit down and just be really straight and honest and ask them, have you smoked? And when have you smoked? And did you notice how it affected you? Did you smoke before school? Did you smoke after school with your friends? Were you at a party? You know, how did you feel? I think a lot of kids will even be honest to say, it didn't make me feel that good, or I felt paranoid. I remember this was some of my own children. So my middle child giving advice to her younger sibling as he was heading out the door. And she said it half jokingly, but she says, you know, if they're smoking weed, don't mix it with alcohol. Make smart choices. And she waved a little finger at him. And I remember chuckling at the time. And I thought, thank you for giving him that good advice. Because sometimes when you're a parent, you're also juggling a lot. And it's, you know, you're thinking these and you're worrying about your children, but sometimes you don't really stop enough and check in with them to ask them. Yes, you're prying a little bit, but you can ask them in a way that makes them hopefully want to open up and be straight with you and not hold it back.
I think it's important to talk to them not just once about it too, but to check in with them. I talked to my son, was talking to him again and felt like I was nagging him, but then I heard him repeat back at me what I had said, is that it's okay if I'm curious about cannabis, but I should wait until my 20s to use it because my brain is still developing. And when I heard him say that, that was just a really proud moment for me. It's like, oh, you are listening to me and this is working.
Right. But you know, there's an important thing there. You didn't tell him don't do it ever. Mm-hmm. Because you know, there's nothing that drives a kid to, we're all curious. That's just the nature of humans. And the minute, I know how it is when I was growing up, the minute my parents would say, don't do that, I'm like, yeah, right. And being told you can never do something is just too tempting.
It makes it sound too fun.
Too fun. Yeah. Why can't I do this? You know what? You can do it when the time is right. Mm-hmm. Just not right now. Wait till the time is right so you can really enjoy it. And I think that really changes the perception for kids. It's like, okay, I'm going to get to do it.
There was a study that actually showed that the way that you discuss it and talk with your kids and your parenting style has a lot of effect on whether or not they will choose to use or not. They call it parents with high responsiveness, which is parental love, support, care, encouragement, and understanding. So discussing with your kid, not just talking at them and waving a finger. And then high demandingness, which is directing, monitoring, and controlling their behavior, that these two things are the best at preventing your kid from early substance abuse. But if you are a parent who either is neglectful, which is the other end of the spectrum, just no care, support, no conversations, no rules that kid is likely to use. Or if you're a parent who's just a total authoritarian, which is like, don't do this, don't do that, with none of the discussion to back it up, that also can drive your kid to use.
No, absolutely makes sense.
Talking to your kids is important to keep them off, but also to be aware that if you're a parent who consumes cannabis, that the closest place that your kid can access it is in your home. You know, we've had alcohol around us all our lives. We don't think twice about locking up our beer or wine or the liquor cabinet. Maybe some people have that locked up. You know, locking up cannabis, it's kind of a no-brainer, right? Like, well, we should lock up everything. You should lock up your prescriptions, your alcohol, your cannabis. And that could be as simple as getting a new doorknob at the Home Depot that has a key lock on it and changing the lock to your closet. Very cheap. You can purchase special lock boxes. We have them at the Hook for cost. Or you can go my route. I need to have a lot of stuff. I got a fancy, cute locker that matches my room on Amazon. I know that when my kid and all his teenage friends are over, probably in my house right now, that all that stuff is safe.
Good advice. Absolutely. You mentioned, and Bailey, you were talking a little earlier about what's happening with the local school board and some of the challenges you're up against with the new store. Has there been any thought about a proactive educational course on cannabis that you would deliver, your people would deliver at the schools? I think the part of the problem, and I've talked to lots of parents over the years back when we got in this industry, and there were a lot of parents back then who said we were nuts and we still had school-age kids at the time, and they were pretty upset. And I had a few moms approach me very angry. How could you be doing this? It's so irresponsible. What's wrong with you? You guys are just drug dealers. I mean, hold up a minute. I'm not saying it's for kids. It's for adults. And we had the alcohol versus cannabis conversation, but it was falling on deaf ears. But it occurred to me that many of these educational opportunities that are out there really can't be delivered effectively by just anyone. Whereas you know the topics, it could be a presentation that could be pre-approved by the school board in advance and say, look, the knowledge and education is the way to keep kids safe. It's just like sex education that they do in the schools. It's the same.
Yeah.
Maybe that might be a way to diffuse some of these upset parents and also do something important just to calm everyone down, but also deliver valuable information to the kids themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up. In fact, we have taken the first step in creating a website, safecannabis.net, where we discuss important topics such as locking up your cannabis, ways, you know, to talk about cannabis with your kids, and other, you know, other resources like what happens if you, you know, take too much, just for people who are of age consuming cannabis. And there is a lot of education to be done around this topic. And we have extended the offer to communicate with the school board, with the schools and the kids, and create more educational programs. I don't know if our olive branch was received just yet, but we are more than willing to work with the schools. And we have such a wonderful team of people that are so, I'm so inspired by, so knowledgeable, just a wealth of knowledge. And with this challenge being posed right now, I think it's a really good opportunity to explore more avenues in communication with the schools, with parents. Because I think about when I was a kid and growing up, my job didn't exist. None of our jobs existed. You know, this is very, very new industry. And because it's new, there are so many regulations. And I think that there's also some work to be done around destigmatizing the industry itself and the industry workers and the owners of these businesses and, you know, the intent there, and really understanding that it's very difficult for a kid, it's impossible for a kid to access cannabis from a dispensary. And so when we're having those topics of conversation with our kids, you know, asking them open and transparent communication about, you know, hey, have you tried this? How did it make you feel? What is your experience there? And where are the kids actually getting this cannabis, you know? And there's this whole other market besides, you know, the black market, but this other unregulated market of these psychoactive hemp products that are posing a huge danger to kids, because you can just walk into a gas station, oftentimes without even showing ID, and get a product that has, you know, the same amount, if not more, THC in those products than sold at a dispensary. And it's completely unregulated. And so you don't really know what else is in that product. So I think it's definitely, this is the starting point to a bigger conversation to be had about cannabis in general, and then these other markets and these products, and even extending to the pharmaceuticals too. Like, it's just as easy for children to access the medicine cabinet at home. And that's so dangerous, so addictive. And that's a whole nother rabbit hole we could go down. But it's just, I think that although this has been a big challenge for us, I definitely am one to see the positive in it and see how this conversation could continue to grow and, you know, maybe start something that really needed to be talked about and heard. Yeah, I appreciate that question, because we're ready. We're ready to talk about it. We want to educate. We want to devote ourselves to the community in every way possible.
So for the parent that is sort of stocking up for themselves, And you mentioned having the, I'm probably less worried, and I think parents tend to worry a little bit less about smokables as they do edibles, because edibles resemble candy, and candy's a wonderful, chocolates and gummies and chews, and they're all wonderful delivery systems for cannabis. And in fact, in many cases, they make the cannabis work better because of the lipids and other important things that are in those candies. And so I think just common sense for parents, even if you don't have a safe, put it up out of the way. Don't put it in your nightstand drawer where it's easy access. So just use common sense. That would at least help mitigate easy accidental use by kids. And I think some of that is just basic common sense. Besides telling kids who we don't want to be using cannabis, I can also think of experiences where cannabis was helpful. I've seen kids with severe ADHD, severely hyperactivity, and they couldn't study and even function in class without a little cannabis on board. And now I've seen these people become young, very successful young adults, and now their cannabis use has really curtailed, but they needed it at that time to sort of calm themselves and be able to focus. Likewise, I can think of parents I've talked to with kids on the autism spectrum, and same kind of thing in that there's so much within themselves, within their own heads, that the cannabis kind of brings them out, calms them a little bit. So if they're frustrated, they can take that extra beat to be calm as opposed to act out. And it's been tremendously helpful. So there is a role for cannabis medicinally for kids who need it. And that's important too. I think parents need to think about that and acknowledge that too. And the only way we're going to get good at that is it's going to take time. Parents need to be proactive.
I think that our partner WAM has done a really good job of assessing medical needs for those special cases, because yes, there are a lot of great uses medicinally for cannabis to help even, you know, youth. They're few and far between. Like, I think that it needs special evaluation for every case. People need advice, questions about it, that WAM is a great resource for them.
That's good. Yeah. And it's a local resource too, and that's important. You got it right here. Yeah, great. So Bailey, talk to us a little bit about what's happening in the whole legal world, the stigmatization world of cannabis, because it's seemingly taking forever.
It is seemingly taking forever. And I think that this past months of work that we've been doing has showed that. I think that sometimes it feels like we're taking one step forward, two steps back in a lot of ways. There's the portrayal of the modern cannabis user, or like the classic stoner, right? And then there's the actual modern cannabis user. And the modern cannabis user is, you know, highly successful people. You could be anything. You can use cannabis for anything, and you can, you know, live your life to it the fullest. And in a lot of ways, I truly believe that it can help enhance your lifestyle. You know, a lot of cannabis users are oftentimes very active, have lower BMIs, and sometimes lower instances of type 2 diabetes. And so just for general health, I think that it's really important to note that it's not the classic lazy person that we see on TV that's portrayed in like a Pineapple Express movie. Like, we're moving forward, we're moving past that. And because of that, and because of how it's portrayed, I feel like it's caused, you know, a lot of fear in regards to what we're going through right now. There's been a lot of fear around cannabis. It's what was known as the devil's lettuce back in the Reefer Madness days. But thousands of years prior, it's always been used as a medicine. And so we have that portrayal. We have the user that uses however often and goes about their daily life and carries on. And then we also have the people that Steph was mentioning, WAM, who are sick and dying people and have to really, really rely on cannabis as a tool for healing and a tool for living most fulfilled possible life while they can, even if it's, you know, near the end of their lives, and creating a more comfortable experience for them. So we're kind of working with a broad spectrum of the why, the intent behind the use. And so I think that we're moving in a good direction. I think that there is more education, and I hope that the stigma is becoming less around the classic common stoner that we might see in TV and movies. But I still think that there is a lot of work to be done. I still think that there is a lot of conversations to be had. And I think that it's really important, of course, for younger generations to get out there and vote for what they believe in and stand strongly about, because it's absolutely essential for our future and the future generations. It will set the tone for how we carry forward and what conversations will be had. And it's important to really empower one another to stand up for what we believe in. And us at The Hook and in this industry, we believe in power of healing and the power of cannabis as medicine. So yeah, I think that things are going to continue to change, especially someday if we go federally legal. But right now, we're going to carry on with where we're at. I know that going back to the school board conversation that's been had this past weeks and months, it's important to note that the dispensary that we're trying to open is completely legal and within the zoning. It is 850 feet away from Santa Cruz High. It's over 1,000 feet away from Mission Hill. And the legal requirements right now in the city of Santa Cruz is 600 feet. And so we're well above that. But the kind of two steps back was the pose to change that rule, change it to 2,000 feet away
from
school.
So you wouldn't no longer be eligible.
We would no longer be eligible, not just for that location, but for any location in Santa Cruz. And it just was really awakening for all of us to, you know, think about that and put ourselves there and what that would look like. And, you know, and that's just not even including the seeing it visually on a map, I think was really astonishing for a lot of people because you can't really, I'm a visual learner, you can't really think about it depth until you see it and you're like, wow, that's just a different future. And it's also a different future than any of us had imagined here in the Santa Cruz community, considering that Santa Cruz is like a pioneer town for cannabis culture here in California and in the nation. So it was interesting to think about. So there's work to be done, but I am confident that we're moving in a positive direction. At least I like to think so. Good. Optimists over here.
Oh, that's good. We need more optimists.
Yes.
Well, and I think part of what they're responding to is, and hence the trying to get the regulatory scheme to 2,000 feet, is that they really want you in a back corner industrial park, not on a major street.
Yeah.
And so you're very visible. You're visible to everyone, but there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Right? In fact, I think that's better. And in a way, it's safer because everyone can see what's going on. It's transparent. But you're going to have folks, obviously, that don't feel that way. Another thing that's optimistic, like you are, is science feels like it's finally catching up. You know, COVID was hard. COVID times were hard for the scientific community. And of course, until legalization in 2019, no one could even access cannabis. And then it took them a while to get their grants lined up. But I feel like the clip at which research now is starting to roll out is much better. Almost every month, there's a new study coming out. The one that I read just a couple days ago, I loved. And it was from the SUNY Medical School in New York, a highly respected medical institution. And they just released a study that they did on cannabis and Alzheimer's, which is really a hot topic. There's a huge portion of our population turning 65. Thousands of 65-year-olds every single day, which means a third of our population is 65 and older. That's a lot. And a huge proportion of people in that age group are concerned about Alzheimer's, and it's a legitimate concern. And against popular notions where you might think that cannabis would slow down your brain as you age, it actually relaxing the brain and a lot of the plaque that builds up that causes the Alzheimer's is not present in those that primarily smoke but that have cannabis use. So I thought that was really a positive thing.
Yeah, wow. That's fascinating. Thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. It's really important to hear and for the community to hear.
And so I think there's things like that. There's research like that on a whole myriad of specific medical issues and concerns where they're looking to see if cannabis can play a role. And I'm hopeful that as more of these studies become available, that even down to the average everyday citizen, maybe I need to change my perceptions about cannabis. And that's going to help. It's going to help us get where we need to go.
Absolutely. I love hearing that. My dad is going to be turning 65 this year. It's kind of went backwards in time where he never really used cannabis until it was legalized here in California. And now he, you know, has been doing hardwood floors his whole life for the past 40 years down on his hands and knees. And so he uses it for pain management. But I've seen my dad these past like 10 years just totally blossom into like a new character. Like he's so much more relaxed. He's just, you know, picked up playing the bongos. Like he's just a different person. And he's also entering a new era, but it's really great to see that. And it's great to see like the benefits that it can have on people who are seniors or elderly people. It's just great across the board. And I think that that's a great focus on community and on our world and the use cases for sure.
What's the latest on really moving things down the road with legalization? I know we're still waiting on banking. There's a lot of things we're still waiting on. We're still waiting for the black market to get extinguished, which has been one of our really major problems for the dispensary and businesses in California because the black market here is so strong. Became an even bigger issue as a result of the recession or the high inflation because now people are like, well, I can go to the dispensary and buy my eighth or I can buy it from Joe, who I used to buy it from two blocks away. You know, it's not tested. I don't know quite what I'm getting, but it's cheaper. And so we're running into this really opposing forces that are really working against us in the industry. And it feels like even though legalization happened, it sort of stalled after that. And nothing really then came behind it to say, okay, we got you lined up for banking. And yep, we're taking care of the rogue black market stuff. And yep, and now we're working on security and safety.
Absolutely.
In order to get there, what we really need actually is federal legalization, because it's federal, because it's federally illegal is why we don't have banking, which causes all kinds of problems. So like with this location, we fit into these narrow bubble of zoning that the city set forth. Well, on top of this narrow bubble of zoning, we also can't rent from places that don't own their property outright, because any place with a bank loan is not going to be able to rent to anyone with a cannabis business. People don't realize that the number of places that are actually available to us are very, very small. And it's a problem. We're taxed heavily. They're not getting the revenue they wanted. Well, surprise, it's because 2/3 of sales are all still going down on the black market. And until it's legal countrywide, I don't see any hope of stopping the black market.
Yeah, and it's particularly bad in California because it's been the market here back, and even in the Prop 215 days, was vibrant. And it's been like that since the beginning. And so you can't just flip a switch and have it go away when there's been no reason and also no enforcement. So
reason, no enforcement. And it's impossible for a lot of those people who are black marketing to become legal, because the hurdles to become legal are so great. There's a lot of money that you need.
Yeah. No, they don't make it easy. We certainly have our challenges to bear, no question. What are things that we can do to educate more on cannabis as a holistic part of a holistic and healthy lifestyle? Because I think that's, another educational aspect that will help people get over their fear.
Yeah. I mean, I would say a first step would be connecting with the medical Western medicine. I would say connecting with doctors recommending cannabis as a initial first step, rather than, you know, pharmaceuticals that can be extremely dangerous and addictive. That could definitely be a first step. And yes, speaking transparently about it and its use, all of that kind of plays into the breaking of the stigma of it. Like, this is here as a tool, continuing the conversation that this is medicine and it can be paired with other activities that are beneficial for overall health, whether that using cannabis as a sleep aid, using it as you work out, small doses, or, you know, as you exercise, going out on a walk. And then the whole other piece of it is known, but maybe less often talked about, is kind of like this spiritual piece of really opening up your mind and your soul to this life and creating an overall positive lifestyle for yourself and connection to other people. Like you were mentioning, Lisa, how it is, could be even more of a social experience for people than alcohol, in the sense that you're making connections with people, you're feeling a lot of heart, you're able to drop any barriers, open up with a person more authentically. And I think we're seeing that in the industry too. Steph was talking about the drinks. There's low dosage drinks. It's more, a little bit more common to go to like a party or event or occasion, and there potentially could be cannabis drinks there over alcohol, which is so common, so normalized. So, and it's a lot healthier. I mean, you don't experience a hangover the next day. You're not feeling all the dangerous effects that Steph listed of alcohol. So yeah, just creating more conversations, normalizing it to a point where people feel confident in using it. And then also reminding people to, you know their dose. It was touched on that different than it was back then. And now we have the beautiful opportunity to explore products that are, you know, regulated, tested. We like to say safer than baby food, because they are so rigorously tested. And in that way, really getting to know the dose, starting small, whatever that may be. If you're new to cannabis, really just having that connection time with yourself and exploration with yourself and getting to know what works for you, what doesn't, and going from there on your, you know, each person's journey is totally unique. So, yeah,
absolutely. Well, it's just interesting. And maybe this is something that your average consumer is not quite ready for. You know, when you go to the doctor and he recommends a prescription, take this many pills this time a day, take it with food on empty stomach, whatever. So you get very explicit instructions, but it's sort of a one size fits all. And I think the beauty of cannabis, which is a blessing, but takes a little more effort on the part of the consumer, is know your dose. But sometimes you got to figure out what your dose is. I do think they're starting to get it. But at first, it's not intuitive. They're used to saying, here, take this pill. Whereas cannabis, we're telling people, think about it. Stop for a minute. Think about what it is you're trying to get some relief on and start slow. Experiment till you find your right dose. And once you find your right dose, then you're golden. Now you know how to use it and you're going to feel better. Or if it didn't feel quite what you thought, maybe you need to not use that and now try this. So we are asking the consumers to be more engaged and thinking about what you're going to take, why you're going to take it, how you're going to take it, and when. And I think a lot of people just are lazy and they don't want to have to think too much. But the benefits of just giving it a little thought and a little time is so worth it.
Totally.
You know, and I do a fair amount of cannabis consulting with consumers, and it's one of the things that I enjoy about the job the most. And I always tell them, and I said, I know this is going to sound like it's a pain in the rear. Start a little journal and just do it for 1 week, because within a week, you're going to have it figured out. And then you're going to be so grateful that you did it.
Yeah.
So pay attention for just that first week. Of what you took, how much, when, and what time of day, being able to make adjustments as you go. And you will thank yourself when it's over. But it's, again, it's just not intuitive. And people have grown used to just reading a little label, take it, and be done with it. Hopefully that will change and people will be more informed and they'll be enlightened to want to take more control.
Yeah, being proactive, that's definitely the word. And developing a deeper connection with yourself and what you truly need and doing that check-in. So the same thing with like nourishing ourselves with food, you know, what is it that we want to put in our bodies and how does it make us feel? And doing that mental check-in is so important. So I'm glad that you brought that up, Lisa. Yeah, that's really great.
We're all in this together. We got to educate each other. So,
absolutely.
Well, it has been great, Stephanie and Bailey, having you here. Really a great conversation, an important conversation. We've covered some really good topics, not only about families and what parents and kids can do to work together to keep family safe, to keep kids safe. There's a lot going on for young people today, and we want to give them every chance of success and figuring out how to incorporate cannabis in a responsible way and hopefully keeping them intrigued, but also not so intrigued that they're willing to wait until the right time in their life so they can really enjoy it as opposed to having it create a potential problem. And then we also talked about the importance of education overall, not only for parents, but for general users and the role that plays in moving the industry forward so that we can get beyond the stigmatization, so we can get beyond the lack of knowledge and help the medical community and help the researchers disseminate this important information so cannabis can benefit our society in all the ways that it was intended to. Thank you so much for coming. It's been great having you.
Thanks for having us, Lisa.
Thank you for having us. Such a great conversation.
Before we go, I just want to do a little shout out for the Hook store. So you've got the store in Watsonville, the store in Capitola, upcoming store on the west side in Santa Cruz. So it'll be three stores.
And, yes.
Okay, excellent. And then the one in west side, that's going to be a collab with WAM.
Correct. Yes, okay. It'll be an access point for people to pick up their medicine as well. And we'll continue on our WAM Roundup program where people can donate directly to WAM to help support the mission and, yeah, getting people access to their medicine.
Which is goes back to the Compassionate Care Act of the old days, which
yep.
is fantastic.
It's a beautiful thing, yeah.
Absolutely love it. Best of luck to you both and in the opening of the store and getting all this important information out. And I look forward to chatting with you again soon.
That's this week's episode of the Collective Wisdom Podcast. Be sure to visit cacollectivewisdom.com or email us at collectivewisdompodcast@gmail.com to join the conversation. Thank you for listening.